Chapter 25. Brazen rollers on which it moves, a clear view of the surface immediately beneath the automaton, being thus afforded to the spectators. The chair on which the figure sits is affixed permanently to the box. On the top of this ladder is a chessboard, also permanently affixed. The right arm of the chess player is extended at full length before him, at right angles with his body, and lying, in an apparently careless position, by the side of the board. The back of the hand is upwards. The board itself is 18 inches square. The left arm of the figure is bent at the elbow, and in the left hand is a pipe. A green drapery conceals the back of the Turk, and falls partially over the front of both shoulders. To judge from the external appearance of the box, it is divided into 5 compartments, 3 cupboards of equal dimensions, and 2 drawers occupying that portion of the chest lying beneath the cupboards. The foregoing observations apply to the appearance of the automaton upon its first introduction into the presence of the spectators. Maelzel now informs the company that he will disclose to their view the mechanism of the machine. Taking from his pocket a bunch of keys, he unlocks with one of them, door marked tilde in the cut above, and throws the cupboard fully open to the inspection of all present. Its whole interior is apparently filled with wheels, pinions, levers, and other machinery, crowded very closely together, so that the eye can penetrate but a little distance into the mass. Leaving this door open to its full extent, he goes now round to the back of the box, and raising the drapery of the figure, opens another door situated precisely in the rear of the one first opened. Holding a lighted candle at this door, and shifting the position of the whole machine repeatedly at the same time, a bright light is thrown entirely through the cupboard, which is now clearly seen to be full, completely full, of machinery. The spectators being satisfied of this fact, Maelzel closes the back door, locks it, takes the key from the lock, lets fall the drapery of the figure, and comes round to the front. The door marked I, it will be remembered, is still open. The exhibitor now proceeds to open the drawer which lies beneath the cupboards at the bottom of the box for, although there are apparently 2 drawers, there is really only one, the 2 handles, and 2 keyholes being intended merely for ornament. Having opened this drawer to its full extent, a small cushion, and a set of chessmen, fixed in a framework made to support them perpendicularly, are discovered. Leaving this drawer, as well as cupboard number 1 open, Maelzel now unlocks door number 2 and door number 3, which are discovered to be folding doors, opening into one and the same compartment. To the right of this compartment, however, that is to say the spectator's right, a small division, 6 inches wide, and filled with machinery, is partitioned off. The main compartment itself, in speaking of that portion of the box visible upon opening doors 2 and 3 we shall always call it the main compartment, is lined with dark cloth, and contains no machinery, whatever beyond 2 pieces of steel, quadrant-shaped, and situated one in each of the rear top corners of the compartment. A small protuberance about 8 inches square, and also covered with dark cloth, lies on the floor of the compartment near the rear corner on the spectator's left hand. Leaving doors number 2 and number 3 open as well as the drawer, and door no. I, the exhibitor now goes round to the back of the main compartment, and, unlocking another door there, displays clearly all the interior of the main compartment, by introducing a candle behind it and within it. The whole box being thus apparently disclosed to the scrutiny of the company, Maelzel, still leaving the doors and drawer open, rolls the automaton entirely round, and exposes the back of the Turk, by lifting up the drapery. A door about 10 inches square is thrown open in the loins of the figure, and a smaller one also in the left thigh. The interior of the figure, as seen through these apertures, appears to be crowded with machinery. In general, every spectator is now thoroughly satisfied of having beheld and completely scrutinized. At one and the same time, every individual portion of the automaton, and the idea of any person, being concealed in the interior, during so complete an exhibition of that interior, if ever entertained, is immediately dismissed as preposterous in the extreme. M. Maelzel, having rolled the machine back into its original position, now informs the company that the automaton will play a game of chess with anyone disposed to encounter him. This challenge being accepted, a small table is prepared for the antagonist, and placed close by the rope, but on the spectator's side of it, and so situated as not to prevent the company from obtaining a full view of the automaton. From a drawer in this table is taken a set of chessmen, and Maelzel arranges them generally, but not always, with his own hands, on the chessboard, which consists merely of the usual number of squares painted upon the table. The antagonist having taken his seat, the exhibitor approaches the drawer of the box, and takes therefrom the cushion, which, after removing the pipe from the hand of the automaton, he places under its left arm as a support. Then taking also from the drawer the automaton's set of chessmen, he arranges them upon the chessboard before the figure. He now proceeds to close the doors, and to lock them, leaving the bunch of keys in door number one. He also closes the drawer, and, finally, winds up the machine, by applying a key to an aperture in the left end,
the spectator's left,
of the box. The game now commences, the automaton taking the first move. The duration of the contest is usually limited to half an hour, but if it be not finished at the expiration of this period, and the antagonist still contend that he can beat the automaton, M. Maelzel has seldom any objection to continue it. Not to weary the company is the ostensible, and no doubt the real object of the limitation. It would of course be understood that when a move is made at his own table by the antagonist, the corresponding move is made at the box of the automaton by Maelzel himself, who then acts as the representative of the antagonist. On the other hand, when the Turk moves, the corresponding move is made at the table of the antagonist, also by M. Maelzel, who then acts as the representative of the automaton. In this manner it is necessary that the exhibitor should often pass from one table to the other. He also frequently goes in rear of the figure to remove the chessmen which it has taken, and which it deposits, when taken, on the box to the left,
to its own left,
of the board. When the automaton hesitates in relation to its move, the exhibitor is occasionally seen to place himself very near its right side, and to lay his hand, now and then, in a careless manner upon the box. He has also a peculiar shuffle with his feet, calculated to induce suspicion of collusion with the machine in minds which are more cunning than sagacious. These peculiarities are, no doubt, mere mannerisms of M. Maelzel, or, if he is aware of them at all, he puts them in practice with a view of exciting in the spectators a false idea of the pure mechanism in the automaton. The Turk plays with his left hand. All the movements of the arm are at right angles. In this manner, the hand,
which is gloved and bent in a natural way,
being brought directly above the piece to be moved, descends finally upon it, the fingers receiving it, in most cases, without difficulty. Occasionally, however, when the piece is not precisely in its proper situation, the automaton fails in his attempt at seizing it. When this occurs, no second effort is made, but the arm continues its movement in the direction originally intended, precisely as if the piece were in the fingers. Having thus designated the spot whither the move should have been made, the arm returns to its cushion, and Maelzel performs the evolution which the automaton pointed out. At every movement of the figure, machinery is heard in motion. During the progress of the game, the figure now and then rolls its eyes, as if surveying the board, moves its head, and pronounces the word etchik,
check,
when necessary. Asterisk 3, if a false move be made by his antagonist, he raps briskly on the box with the fingers of his right hand, shakes his head roughly, and replacing the piece falsely moved, in its former situation, assumes the next move himself. Upon beating the game, he waves his head with an air of triumph, looks round complacently upon the spectators, and drawing his left arm farther back than usual, suffers his fingers alone to rest upon the cushion. In general, the Turk is victorious once or twice he has been beaten. The game being ended, Maelzel will again, if desired, exhibit the mechanism of the box, in the same manner as before. The machine is then rolled back, and a curtain hides it from the view of the company. There have been many attempts at solving the mystery of the automaton. The most general opinion in relation to it, an opinion too not unfrequently adopted by men who should have known better, was, as we have before said, that no immediate human agency was employed. In other words, that the machine was purely a machine and nothing else. Many, however, maintained that the exhibitor himself regulated the movements of the figure by mechanical means operating through the feet of the box. Others, again, spoke confidently of a magnet. Of the first of these opinions we shall say nothing at present more than we have already said. In relation to the second, it is only necessary to repeat what we have before stated, that the machine is rolled about on casters, and will, at the request of a spectator, be moved to and fro to any portion of the room, even during the progress of a game. The supposition of the magnet is also untenable, for, if a magnet were the agent, any other magnet in the pocket of a spectator would disarrange the entire mechanism. The exhibitor, however, will suffer the most powerful lodestone to remain even upon the box during the whole of the exhibition. The first attempt at a written explanation of the secret, at least the first attempt of which we ourselves have any knowledge, was made in a large pamphlet printed at Paris in 1785. The author's hypothesis amounted to this, that a dwarf actuated the machine. This dwarf he supposed to conceal himself during the opening of the box, by thrusting his legs into two hollow cylinders, which were represented to be, but which are not, among the machinery in the cupboard. While his body was out of the box entirely, and covered by the drapery of the Turk. When the doors were shut, the dwarf was enabled to bring his body within the box, the noise produced by some portion of the machinery allowing him to do so unheard, and also to close the door by which he entered. The interior of the automaton being then exhibited, and no person discovered, the spectators, says the author of this pamphlet, are satisfied that no one is within any portion of the machine. This whole hypothesis was too obviously absurd to require comment or refutation, and accordingly we find that it attracted very little attention. In 1789 a book was published at Dresden by M1. F. Frechier, in which another endeavor was made to unravel the mystery. Mr. Frechier's book was a pretty large one, and copiously illustrated by colored engravings. His supposition was that well-taught boy, very thin and tall, of his age sufficiently, so that he could be concealed in the drawer almost immediately under the chessboard, played the game of chess, and affected all the evolutions of the automaton. This idea, although even more silly than that of the Parisian author, met with a better reception, and was in some measure believed to be the true solution of the wonder, until the inventor put an end to the discussion by suffering a close examination of the top of the box. These bizarre attempts at explanation were followed by others equally bizarre. Of late years, however, an anonymous writer, by a course of reasoning exceedingly unphilosophical, has contrived to blunder upon a plausible solution, although we cannot consider it altogether the true one. His essay was first published in a Baltimore weekly paper, was illustrated by cuts, and was entitled An Attempt to Analyze the Automaton Chess Player of M. Maelzel. This essay we suppose to have been the original of the pamphlet to which Sir David Brewster alludes in his Letters on Natural Magic, and which he has no hesitation in declaring a thorough and satisfactory explanation.
The results of the analysis are undoubtedly, in the main, just, but we can only account for Brewster's pronouncing the essay a thorough and satisfactory explanation by supposing him to have bestowed upon it a very cursory and inattentive perusal. In the compendium of the essay, made use of in the letters on natural magic, it is quite impossible to arrive at any distinct conclusion in regard to the adequacy or inadequacy of the analysis, on account of the gross misarrangement and deficiency of the letters of reference employed. The same fault is to be found in the apostrophe attempt and C as we originally saw it. The solution consists in a series of minute explanations, accompanied by woodcuts, the whole occupying many pages, in which the object is to show the possibility of so shifting the partitions of the box as to allow a human being, concealed in the interior, to move portions of his body from one part of the box to another, during the exhibition of the mechanism, thus eluding the scrutiny of the spectators. There can be no doubt, as we have before observed, and as we will presently endeavor to show, that the principle, or rather the result, of this solution, is the true one. Some person is concealed in the box during the whole time of exhibiting the interior. We object, however, to the whole verbose description of the manner in which the partitions are shifted, to accommodate the movements of the person concealed. We object to it as a mere theory assumed in the first place, and to which circumstances are afterwards made to adapt themselves. It was not, and could not have been, arrived at by any inductive reasoning. In whatever way the shifting is managed, it is of course concealed at every step from observation. To show that certain movements might possibly be affected in a certain way is very far from showing that they are actually so affected. There may be an infinity of other methods by which the same results may be obtained. The probability of the one assumed proving the correct one is then as unity to infinity. But, in reality, this particular point, the shifting of the partitions, is of no consequence whatever. It was altogether unnecessary to devote 7 or 8 pages for the purpose of proving what no one in his senses would deny, viz., that the wonderful mechanical genius of Baron Kempelen could invent the necessary means for shutting a door or slipping aside a panel, with a human agent to at his service in actual contact with the panel or the door, and the whole operations carried on, as the author of the essay himself shows, and as we shall attempt to show more fully hereafter, entirely out of reach of the observation of the spectators. In attempting ourselves an explanation of the automaton, we will, in the first place, endeavor to show how its operations are effected, and afterwards describe, as briefly as possible, the nature of the observations from which we have deduced our result. It will be necessary for a proper understanding of the subject that we repeat here in a few words the routine adopted by the exhibitor in disclosing the interior of the box, a routine from which he never deviates in any material particular. In the first place, he opens the door number 1. Leaving this open, he goes round to the rear of the box and opens a door precisely at the back of door number 1. To this back door he holds a lighted candle. He then closes the back door, locks it, and, coming round to the front, opens the drawer to its full extent. This done, he opens the doors number 2 and number 3, the folding doors, and displays the interior of the main compartment. Leaving open the main compartment, the drawer, and the front door of cupboard No. I, he now goes to the rear again, and throws open the back door of the main compartment. In shutting up the box, no particular order is observed, except that the folding doors are always closed before the drawer. Now, let us suppose that, when the machine is first rolled into the presence of the spectators, a man is already within it. His body is situated behind the dense machinery in cupboard No. T, the rear portion of which machinery is so contrived as to slip en masse from the main compartment to the cupboard No. I, as occasion may require, and his legs lie at full length in the main compartment. When Maelzel opens the door, no. I, the man within, is not in any danger of discovery, for the keenest eve cannot penetrate more than about 2 inches into the darkness within. But the case is otherwise when the back door of the cupboard, no. I, is opened. A bright light then pervades the cupboard, and the body of the man would be discovered if it were there. But it is not. The putting the key in the lock of the back door was a signal on hearing which the person concealed brought his body forward to an angle as acute as possible, throwing it altogether, or nearly so, into the main compartment. This, however, is a painful position, and cannot be long maintained. Accordingly, we find that Maelzel closes the back door. This being done, there is no reason why the body of the man may not resume its former situation, for the cupboard is again so dark as to defy scrutiny. The drawer is now opened, and the legs of the person within drop down behind it in the space it formerly occupied. *4, there is, consequently, now no longer any part of the man in the main compartment, his body being behind the machinery in cupboard number 1, and his legs in the space occupied by the drawer. The exhibitor, therefore, finds himself at liberty to display the main compartment. This he does, opening both its back and front doors, and no person is discovered. The spectators are now satisfied that the whole of the box is exposed to view and exposed to all portions of it at one and the same time. But of course this is not the case. They neither see the space behind the drawer, nor the interior of cupboard number 1, the front door, of which latter the exhibitor virtually shuts in shutting its back door. Maelzel, having now rolled the machine around, lifted up the drapery of the Turk, opened the doors in his back and thigh, and shown his trunk to be full of machinery, brings the whole back into its original position, and closes the doors. The man within is now at liberty to move about. He gets up into the body of the Turk, just so high as to bring his eyes above the level of the chessboard. It is very probable that he seats himself upon the Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.